You're listening to I Might Be Wrong, a podcast hosted by myself, Rich Needham, and my co-host, Henry Salmon. Hello, folks. It's us again. We're doing another one of these. We thought we'd record a couple of them, so you've got some actual content. Hopefully, we'll be a little bit more regular. By now, I think we've settled into every other week putting something out, whether it's one of these or a hidden track.
We will try. We will try and do our best. You never know with these things. They might pick up in speed, they might slow down, but that's our aim.
Yeah, we're going to try and get some episodes done when we have time and can think about these things and do a bit of research and give you something that's worth listening to.
Yes.
So yeah, last time you had one of these full episodes, we talked Led Zeppelin, which was yours. It's my turn.
There was a pause because I thought you were going to say who you're going to do. Who are you going to do, Rich?
So yeah, I have decided that we should talk about the XX, who are a band that I very much loved in, 2005 to 2010, when they were sort of really doing stuff.
And I just didn't. Well, it's not that I didn't love them. They just flew straight by me, and I'm not quite sure why, because at this point, we both left university.
Yep.
So we were not sharing music. So somehow or other, they just completely drifted by. So this will be an education for me because I don't really have that much of an XX understanding.
Right. So I guess I should explain who the XX are for those who aren't aware of them. I suspect there will be people who know of the XX more through Jamie XX than they do of the XX.
There's no relation, is there?
There very much is.
Okay.
Jamie XX is one of the early members of the XX, hence the surname.
Okay.
His actual name is Jamie Smith, and he does all the sort of beats and record production, all that kind of stuff for the band. But he's not actually one of the very original members, who were Romy Croft on guitar and vocals and Oliver Sim on bass guitar and vocals. They also have Baria Qureshi, I hope I'm not murdering that too much as a pronunciation, on keyboards and guitars. So Baria was involved, came in for the first album, and then left in between first and second albums. But the actual band members themselves, they met while they were studying at Elliott School. So Sim and Croft started the band as a duo when they were 15. Qureshi joined when they began performing in 2005. So I think they were sort of really getting the band started 2004, 2005, alongside Jamie Smith, who, as I mentioned, then became known as Jamie XX. He joined a year after Qureshi. And apparently, even though he was school friends with the band, he only joined after being formally introduced by their label at the time, Young.
That's interesting.
Very odd.
And there's something strange about schoolmates getting together in bands. It seems like there are certain kind of, I don't know, certain places like schoolyards where people gather and get together. And I don't know, if you think about the number of schools in the land, you kind of just, every now and then, you just get this little kind of gathering of people who are like-minded.
Well, it's such a luck thing, isn't it? Because you've basically got to have people who like music, like similar styles, and have the drive to actually want to write and record their own.
Yeah.
But I do think there's an element of getting started on that stuff when you're in school, particularly if you're like 14, 15, of almost not having the sort of adult boundaries of thinking about this is how a thing should be or should sound. You just sort of like, I'm a teenager, I just want to do the thing that I want to do. And you sort of get on with it without really thinking about it.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I like that.
And what about sounds?
They're an odd one to pin down because they're a band that don't really sound like anyone else. Like they're referred to as indie rock, and I really wouldn't say that they're indie rock.
I think rock is a bit much for them.
They're quiet. And that's one of the things that I really love, is it's not just the way that they create music using the instruments. They use silence almost as an instrument in its own right. So they leave these big spaces and it feels airy and massive and intimate and close all at the same time.
For me, it's very much early morning listening, as in like 1 a.m, 2 a.m, 3 a.m. I kind of feel like if I was a cabbie and I had a late night taxi driver role, I wouldn't listen to really noisy, upbeat music all the time, I'd listen to stuff like this. You kind of drift along with the neon lights going past and quietness in the background. That kind of, those are the images that the XX conjure up for me.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. I love listening to them at night. They're a meditative band. They're very relaxing to listen to. They're good bedroom listening, and people can read into that whatever they want. But they have indie rock elements. And when I say rock again, we're sort of talking the full spectrum there and more the kind of quiet, thoughtful, folky end of rock. But they have electric guitars, they have bass guitars, they have drums, they have vocals, they have some keyboards. But they use them in a way where they're painting just as much with the quiet as they are with any kind of loud.
Mm, that's a skill.
It really is. We've talked about how much we love things being layered in and wall of sound type music and all that. You know, if you listen to this podcast, you've heard us bang on about how much we love that as a style, like that as a way of creating music. This is very much the opposite, but it's still really beautifully engineered. So it still sounds lush when they play it. Just a single note, it's this beautifully rounded, very textured note that hangs in the air and hangs in that silence and doesn't just sound thin.
Yeah, it's well produced. They know that sound they're going for. And you've got to have a good, well-recorded sound if you're going to be sparse with your music.
Yeah, and they do excel. I mean, I'm going to bang on about this quite a bit on this podcast because I think it's so important with them as a band, is they excel at using instruments sparingly. They are thoughtful about dropping a note in here or leaving a vocal to hang here and literally having nothing else there but just that one note or that one vocal or that one piece of percussion that then just decays away to silence before the next thing picks up. And they'll leave pauses, and they're very good at the timing and the thoughtfulness of that. And I do think there's an element maybe around how they came together as a band, because apparently a lot of the way that they wrote was that they would share lyrics at night through instant messaging or rehearsing very quietly in bedrooms so they weren't disturbing the rest of their household.
Ah, which kind of, that makes sense because some of the vocals are very soft.
Yes. I mean, they're almost whispering in places. But the vocals, again, that's another thing that I really have to mention, is they have a male-female vocal dynamic. I love a male-female vocal dynamic. They sing together beautifully. They harmonize beautifully. They bounce off each other really well. And again, it's maybe an element of having been a band or a duo within that band since they were kids, that they sort of have almost like an intuitive understanding of how that works together.
Yeah. Yeah. They play off each other really well. And as you say, that's hard to get right if you just meet someone and go into a studio together.
Yeah. And one of the things that's really interesting is that they talk about communication where they almost communicate with each other through their music.
Okay, what? How?
Right. So Sim had said in an interview that I read with Far Out magazine, although we are three best friends, siblings almost, sometimes communication is not great. I found, speaking for myself and songwriting, stuff has come out in the songwriting before we actually spoke about it as a three. Life, what's going on in life. I've learned stuff about Romy through songs that she has gave me that I didn't even know.
Oh, I see. So it's lyrics and there's meaning in those songs which just appeared. And
you can feel that. There is a lot of really intimate communication going on in these songs. It's really fascinating seeing how that works and getting that. It's one of the things I love. It feels intensely intimate and romantic and beautiful, and there's sensuality there. It's a really different style to a lot of the music that I tend to listen to.
Yeah, and again, that's probably where they just whistled straight over my shoulder because I heard it and
wasn't loud,
but I can hear now why that's appealing.
Yeah. And they have some interesting influences as well. So Philip Glass, who is a composer who's renowned for minimalism. I don't really know his stuff that well, but I've listened to some of it and I do like it. And they also love dance music. So there's an element of that side of things that's clearly leached in here and is what's dragging it away from being a pure indie vibe.
So I just have jumped onto Spotify to look at their fans also like bit at the bottom.
Yeah.
And it is a real old mix. I mean, you've got Alt J, you've got Arcade Fire in there, Broken Bells, Hot Chip. They're not the same as this. And sometimes you listen to an artist and all of the the recommendations and the fans also like are just almost identical bands. Like if you go back to some of the 90s bands, it's all the same shit, basically. It's all kind of just reconstituted with a different lead singer. But this is different, which kind of shows they've almost carved out their own little musical style, which doesn't really sit with other bands.
Yeah, and I think there are definitely threads with some of those bands that make sense. So Alt-J definitely makes sense. They're a quieter, more thoughtful, sensitive artist in a way. Mm-hmm. The Alt-J guys are there's sort of that way. And I think Broken Bells, I can see that as well, because it's that mix of electronica and indie. So the dancey sort of crossover. It's louder, for sure, but it's still quite thoughtful and the vocals are quite intimate, intense, quietly powerful type vocals.
Yeah, they're quite soft. So
yeah, exactly. But yeah, I don't think there's been anything like this before or since, really, in terms of that specific style, which is why it's hard to pin them down. But they were clearly popular. They were, I think, Mercury Music Prize nominated and winners, I think, for this album. Top 10 album of the year, lists all over the place. A million copies sold in an era when piracy was massive.
Wow, that's quite impressive. And you look at their stats from Spotify, again, I'm just kind of glued to it because I'm trying to find out as much about them as I can quickly. They've got, you know, millions and millions of monthly listeners. People love this stuff. So,
yeah.
And you can see it's all this stuff would be brilliant background music to other art. So it sits in the background. It doesn't kind of jump out and jump into your face, which means you can have it as a backing track to TV or something else.
I think it's a bit of both in terms of, I totally agree that you could have it on as something in the background, but I also think it's really, it's quite inspirational in a thoughtful way in terms of you can listen to it and shut your eyes and almost have it inspire you and how you want to think. I don't know if that makes sense, but like that's how I think about it. I have thought of someone else that I'm surprised isn't on that list, which is Enya, is another one that has that sort of more quiet, thoughtful, soft side of music.
Probably but a bit too new age, I guess, but it's that that kind of, I see where you're going with that. You would probably listen to them in similar circumstances.
But the other thing is, can you think of another artist that sounds like Enya? Like no. Enya is their own entirely individual thing as well. And I think that's the thing that sort of connects these artists in my mind a little bit. Should we talk songs?
Yeah, let's. So we're going to go from the, this is the, is it a debut album?
Oh, I don't know that I actually mentioned that. Yes, the XX is their debut album.
Right.
They weren't particularly inventive with the album art, so it's just a big black and white X.
But it's quite eye-catching. I recognise it.
Yep, it's very unique. The amusing thing is the second album is the exact same in reverse, so it's white on black rather than black on white.
That's just lazy.
But, you know, it's an evolution, and the second album's an evolution of the first. We'll come on to a little bit of that. But, yeah, I'm going to start with the intro, which it sort of starts in this sort of lovely but not particularly unusual way. It could easily be the intro to a number of Lush indie band albums. And then around the 100-second mark, they just let some sparse guitar float over low synths. And all of a sudden it's like, oh, this is quiet and deliberately quiet.
Yeah. So there's an intro guitar. It's not really a guitar riff. I mean, that's probably going a bit far, but it's a gentle melody. Guitar. Yeah. And then it kind of builds with some drums. It's an enticing way into an album.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, we've seen stuff like that, like the most recent Doves album has a similar quite quiet thing before it breaks into the rock stuff that comes after it. And this doesn't, this goes the opposite way. But yeah, it's a great way to start the album. And then you move on to something like Crystallized. So this is where the album really gets going for me. There are so many moments where a single guitar melody is allowed to float, or an intimate, almost whispered vocal sits over a minimal percussion or a single synth note. It's gorgeous and lush, but also minimalist and sparse. And I do think that that's really where it all suddenly comes together and crystallizes. Sorry, deliberate pun. I hate myself for doing it, but there you go. But there's also, there's a moment when Croft and Sim are sharing vocals and also singing over each other. Mm-hmm. So there's an initial verse and then a second verse, and one of them sings one verse and the other one sings the other verse. And as they come into the third final section, they both sing their own verses at the same time, which sounds like it would be a complete mess. But for some reason, I don't know how it works. It's chaotic, but it's really beautiful. And it absolutely works that they kind of split apart and then come back into a final sort of outro where she's just singing Go Slow and the whole thing just slows down and just stops.
It is novel, that whole singing different stuff. And you see a lot of duets where you'll just sing a different set of notes. And
yeah,
you'll,
harmonizing
and you'll
harmonize. Is standard, but not doing this.
Yeah, because they're kind of harmonizing and singing completely different words as well. So, yeah. I this is my favorite song of the album. The guitar is a wonderful kind of structure around their singing. And it's, I do like this. This is probably one of those points where it's like, why didn't I think about this back in 2009 when the album came out? But yeah, for some reason.
I don't even know. I'm not even sure what they released, if anything, as singles from this album, because I've only really been aware of it as a full album. But I wouldn't be surprised if there weren't really proper singles, because none of these songs are things that would go into the top 10 of a, you know, a chart.
No, you can kind of see it almost like, I would more expect one of these songs, say, to be a theme tune to a TV show or like an intro, and everyone goes, oh, I love the theme tune to so-and-so. Oh, it's the XX. That's how I would kind of place it.
Yeah, it is. You're right. It is sort of, it's got that TV or filmic vibe to it where it could easily be. And I'm sure they probably have had a bunch of stuff used on TV, on film, whatever. Like, it really wouldn't surprise me. I haven't actually thought to look that up, but someone can tell me on, you know, Twitter or Instagram if you guys are still out there and want to chat with us. But yeah, Islands is the next one I want to talk about because it's a little bit more upbeat. It's a lovely little positive track. I don't have to leave anymore. What I have is right here, being one of the key choral vocals. And the guitar and the bass in this track is just, it's just really pretty. And bass is another thing that I haven't really mentioned yet. The use of this to underpin stuff and really thud in a very, very, very bassy, very low bass way across both the bass guitar and the keyboards is a key thing as well. It really holds things together sometimes when nothing else is going on.
Yeah, they really elevate the guitar sound. So it's really quite high pitched, and the bass sits way down and just kind of rumbles along in the background. It's not that common for them. A lot of bands will make the bass a lighter, more kind of in your face sound, but this just sits back a bit.
It's a way of doing things that dance tracks do. You see it in hip hop, you see it in R&B.
Yeah.
It's not something you really see in indie music. So that's something you can really see coming in as an influence there. Let's go to Fantasy. So this is a great example of the use of quiet in the album. You've got low key vocals and synths sort of floating along for basically more than half the track until guitars even come in.
So I said that just earlier that I said Crystallize is my favourite track, but actually in terms of the album as a whole, I actually really like Fantasy in the next song, Shelter, the way that they really calm it down. And that's where I think if you've got this music on in the background, it almost just buries it into your skull and you can just drift along to it. I really like the way there's space. You mentioned earlier with this track and the next couple, the album just slows down and doesn't try to do too much. It doesn't need to. And I think this is a really, really lovely song.
Yeah, they never seem to feel the need to rush anything, which I really love, because a lot of bands will be very frantic and very like hectic in how they produce their music. And sometimes I want that. But when I want something that's more relaxed and calm, this is a great place to look. And Shelter, you mentioned already, this is probably my favorite track on the album. I love Croft's vocals here, just the opening of the track. It's just quietly powerful with just this hint of synths before everything else comes in late. And then that brilliant chorus. So it's heartbreaking and earnest. Maybe I had said something that was wrong. Can I make it better with the lights turned on?
Yeah, and that's repeated throughout the song, and it does stick it in your head. It's a nice line.
It very much feels like that relationship on a wobble where you're not quite sure, but you know something's not right.
Oh, this whole album is brilliant relationship wobbling music. If you're out there listening to this podcast and you're in a bit of a bad place with that, this will be the soundtrack to your breakup or your bad times. It does that. It's very good at, you know, not quite giving you a hug, but being in tune with that kind of slightly on edge, slightly melancholic sound.
Yeah, I'm sure I've mentioned it on the podcast before, but I'm very much someone who has to listen to music that fits my mood. So if not in a great mood, I have to listen to something that's downbeat or sad or melancholic or something like that. And if I'm in a happy, good mood, then I want to listen to
ska punk,
Finley Quay, you know, whatever, you know, something upbeat, something happy. And this is a great album for sort of matching with that, not necessarily melancholic or sad mood, but certainly thoughtful.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I'm going to finish with Infinity because I think this is maybe the best use of guitar, reverb and space on the whole album. We talked before we recorded this and I suggested that I think there's a hint of Chris Isaak's Wicked Game here for me.
Yeah, that leads into all sorts of interesting sounds. They've clearly got like some drum pads which can go slightly 80s drumming, but they just, again, instead of like going full 80s chaos, they just use it really sparingly. So you've got these this lovely instrumental going on in the background.
Yeah, and the kind of quiet clicks with the percussion for a lot of it. And then they get into the chorus and you've got this combination of the vocal of I Can't Give It Up with the percussion explosions going on in the background. And it's hard to describe, but if you listen to this track, you'll know what we mean.
Yeah, I just, in my head, that is the classic 80s kind of full gas, big hair, electronic drum kit. But they just go and that's it.
Yeah.
It's quite cool.
It's great. I love it. I mean, I could talk about the final two tracks on the album as well, but we probably shouldn't ramble on. It's one of those albums that I feel is deserving of being listened to as a full album.
100%.
I don't know that there are any tracks that are so outstanding that I'd say, oh, if you have to listen to like three tracks on this album, it's these three. I think the whole album just is brilliant as a whole.
I'm quite picky with, if I hear new music and enjoy an album or enjoy a band, I will put them into one or two categories. There's an album kind of that is a whole, or there's one or two tracks off an album, I'll pick it and I'll never listen to the other stuff again. And this, you can't really cherry pick off this. There may be one or two tracks that are better, but the album as a whole is better than the sum of its parts, I think.
Yeah, I think I agree with that as well. So we should talk about a little bit of the rest of the back catalogue, because I'm not sure we'll come back to these guys. Coexist is a brilliant album because they lean even harder into use of silence and emptiness.
This is the reversed X.
This is the second album, with the reverse X on it. I almost did pick that one, but I think finding them through this debut album, like, I had to talk about that really over the other one. But from that album, Angels is stunning. That sort of feels like a crystallization of everything they were trying to achieve in the first album and then focused and turned up to a whole nother level. So crossing Love, Love, Love into basically almost silence is absolutely stunning. And the texture on her vocal on that particular part of that track is beautiful.
Yeah, well, 250 million listeners on Spotify can't be that wrong. It's, it's a cracking song.
Yeah, and then you've got Chained, Reunion and Missing off the album are also great. So if you want to have a listen to some of their stuff, maybe dig into those. But again, I think like the debut, it's an album that's worth listening to as a whole. It's just really, really stunning. And yeah, these guys made these two albums pretty much back to back and then took a 5-year hiatus.
Right.
But part of that is because Jamie XX, he sort of became a huge name in his own right. Tracks like Do It Again and Loud Places became huge smashes after he'd basically done a bunch of work with Jill Scott Heron that brought his work into the spotlight.
Yeah, although, wait, who is it? Let me think. It's the band, the awesome band, the band that do the Kermit the Frog and
LCD Sound System.
Yeah, so LCD Sound System in that song where they name check all the best bands ever. And right. The end of that song is Gil Scott Heron. And so, yeah, he's not too obscure.
Oh, no, no. I meant Gil Scott Heron is who got Jamie XX famous, not oh, the I other see. Way around.
I thought you were like, oh, he's rediscovered him. And it's like, no, everyone no, no. knows who he is. But okay, that yeah. makes more sense.
No, Jamie XX basically did some work for him. And like, that okay. was part of what started to really ramp him into fame. I mean, Jamie XX has headlined festivals. He's done a whole bunch of stuff in his with his own work. Like, that's why I think people will be more likely to have heard some of his stuff necessarily than the XX themselves.
Well, I learned something new today, which was that those two are the kind of almost the same. So,
yeah. Well, this is the other thing as well, is that when they did get back together, ICU felt a bit more like a Jamie XX side project rather than
right.
the XX. It's got a bit more production. It's a bit dancier. And so for me, I don't really pay as much attention to that as an album.
So an ICU was the last album and that's it. Nothing else.
Yes, I think so. It looks like they released that in 2017. And yeah, basically that was it. But they took a 5-year hiatus and that was only 6 years ago. So who knows?
Yeah. Yeah. But I guess back to your point of the sound, you kind of want them to come back and do something more like the original almost rather than being more Jamie XX. But I don't know they'll reform. I'm not sure they will.
I don't know that I'd necessarily need 3 or 4 more albums of this style.
True.
I think the two that they've released are just so brilliant. They're so perfectly formed for what they are that I think they might struggle without moving into a different style. And then if they move into a different style, they don't really sound like the XX to me anymore.
Yeah, I get that. Cool. Live, have you seen them? You must have done.
I have.
Okay.
I saw them for the first time. I've only seen them a couple of times. I saw them for the first time at Shepherd's Bush at the Empire.
Mm-hmm.
And I was extremely excited to see them. And it was a sold out gig. And I was basically stood on the ground floor around sort of to the right hand side, and they came on and they started and it all sounded great. And then the first time some bass kicked in, it flooded everything and you couldn't hear anything but bass.
No. Is that because of where you were standing? Like, were you right in front of the speaker stack or?
Nope. It was just, I read a thing about it that suggested they had a live engineer.
Wow.
Who basically was just didn't have the right setup on. And it just meant every time they hit a bass note on the guitar or on the keyboard, everything else got blocked out and it was just thudding in on that note. And so, yeah, it was a bit of a weird one because it was, generally speaking, it was great, but it was just this weird, not quite right sound.
Such a shame. You hear that at festivals a fair bit.
Well, that's the interesting thing because I saw them at Glastonbury in 2010, I want to say, the second time that I went. And they played the Park stage, and I was very almost reticent to go and see them, but they were comfortably the best or most me act that was on at the time.
Yep.
And they sounded amazing. They sounded absolutely perfect. So I think they maybe had a different sound engineer, or one of the Glastonbury sound desk people was like, let's just turn that down a bit, because they sounded really brilliant. I'm so glad I did see them there, because that was basically like the only other time that I've seen them, and I really would hate to have the idea in my mind that, oh yeah, they're terrible live, because they're not.
Their music does lend itself to that kind of open air vibe.
Oh, it was late in the evening as well.
Nice.
It was the I think it was maybe after the main stages had finished, they had like a 11:30 start on that stage.
Wow. Okay. So it's a good time to catch them.
Perfect time to catch them. So yeah, can recommend them live now that I don't know whether that person was fired or let go or re-educated, but whatever happened, it got better.
Good. Yeah, I've never seen them. I've had the opportunity to. I think a couple of festivals I've been to where they've been poking around and never really rushed towards it. Maybe that's a mistake.
I think you have to be in the right mood.
Yeah.
I think you have to be in the right mood. I think that's true of whether you're at a festival or seeing them live or just listening to them. You have to be in the right mood for these guys. And if you are, they can be the perfect music.
Yeah. I think when we last had this discussion, probably in a bit of a break while recording about a couple of years ago, and I was very scathing. I think I'd listened to them and I really was not in that mood. And I was probably a little bit mean and just said they're rubbish. but they're not. I think, as you say, you need to open your ears a little bit when they're playing.
Yeah, well, I clearly just ignored you and went for putting them on the podcast anyway.
Good. Well, well done. I think that was the right decision.
Yes. Right. I think we're going to wrap it up there. This has been a fun little chat. Cheers for joining us, folks. We will hopefully be back soon.
Maybe.
Thank you for listening to another episode of I Might Be Wrong.